So, a huge Zone Show welcome to Joanna Penn, also known as the Creative Penn. Hi, Joanna.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Well, it's a great pleasure, and it's a real pleasure to be able to reciprocate, because I've been on the Creative Penn podcast 3 times now in the last 4 years, would you believe?
I know. Well, my show's been running for so long. Hopefully I'll come back on yours sometime.
Well, you'd be more than welcome, and I hope I can get to 168 episodes like you.
Yeah, well, you know, like you, I like talking to people, and I learn a lot from my own podcast, so it's a great reason to keep it going.
And long may your podcast run too. So in today's show, we'll probably visit, I think, at least 3 zones. We'll visit the creative zone, because you're obviously a very creative person. We'll visit the entrepreneurial zone, because you're also what you describe as being an authorpreneur. And I think we might visit the time zone, because I know you travel a lot, and the characters in your books travel a lot too. But first, could you explain where the force of nature that is the creative pen came from?
I was an IT consultant for 13 years. One of those jobs that I didn't really enjoy very much, but kind of fell into after university like you do. And I never really liked it. So I looked for a different career many times. I ran a scuba diving business. I did property investment. I tried to get out of that day job so many times and it never worked. And then one day I decided that, you know, in order to break out, I needed to really study how to enjoy what you do, you know, work for your job. So I started writing a book, which the first iteration was called How to Enjoy Your Job. And it's now republished as Career Change, because that's basically what happened. I studied how to enjoy what you do for work. And as a result of that, I learned about self-publishing. I learned about book marketing. I started my blog, thecreativepen.com. And then I started writing fiction. And then, a few years later, 5 years later now, I guess, I've got 3 full-length fiction books, a novella, short story series, couple of non-fiction books. So it's and I'm a professional speaker, and did change my career. And I resigned in September 2011 from my day job as an IT consultant, and I couldn't be happier.
Well, that's amazing. So you've made a career out of something that makes you happy, but also you seem to get so much done. How do you possibly fit all of that in?
Well, I think the problem with asking this question now is everyone goes, oh, well, you're a full-time author, whatever, you can fit the time. But I wrote my first books and built my online platform and my blog and Twitter while I still had a day job. And when I had a day job, what I would do is I would get up really early. So I would get up at 5 and I would write. Now, I think there's 2 kinds of time. One is creative time, when you can actually create something new in the world. And for me, that's in the mornings. So nowadays, I write in the mornings, I create stuff in the mornings. And then it was 5 a.m. before work. And then when I came home from work, I would do blogging, podcasting, social media, and build up an audience that way. And that I call downtime, or I just don't think it requires so much creativity to do these types of things. And so now we're recording in the afternoon. The afternoon is when I do my marketing activities, and I used to do it in the evenings. And then I also got rid of my TV. So I did that 6 years ago now. So
that was a
big deal. But I mean, basically, I read a lot. You know, we do download shows and movies sometimes, but we don't actually have a TV. So it means it's not a dominant force. So that actually frees up a lot of time. But at the end of the day, I think my biggest thing around time is that this is what I love. This is my career. This is my hobby. This is my passion. I don't believe in work-life balance. I actually, my work is my life and my life is my work. And I'm writing to create a legacy. It's not just about an income. This isn't just a job. So when people say, oh, my goodness, you spend so much time doing all this stuff. It's because I love it and because I really want this. I'm very driven to become a successful author. And of course, the definition of success is varied. But for me, I've got a way to go and really create a body of work of which I'm proud of over my creative lifetime.
And when you wrote your first fiction book, Pentecost, did you know it's going to be part of a series, or did the series come afterwards?
Well, when I decided to write fiction, I really did decide to write something that would sell. I didn't want, although I've got a lot of books and ideas inside of me, I wanted to actually write a book that would find a readership and establish readership. And I've also got a master's degree in theology from Oxford. And so I wanted to use a lot of that knowledge in it. And I read, you know, Dan Brown, of course, the kind of religious thriller area. So I decided to write to the readers of Dan Brown. So readers of Dan Brown will like my books, basically. And of course, he sold bazillions. So I thought that sounds like a good idea. But it's also what I love and what I know. So I have a massive background in theology. So Pentecost is about the sort of the history of the early church and the hunt for these stones and, you know, through the bones of the apostles and all around the world, Jerusalem and Spain and America and Iran and all over the place. And I guess when I was writing it, I wanted to have something I could hang future books on, because the big issue with writing fiction, well, the big issue, fun, but also what helps you write the next one quicker, is having established characters and a kind of established genre. So I created the Arcane Institute, which is, you know, they investigate supernatural mysteries and spiritual mysteries around the world. And they have a base under Trafalgar Square in London. And Morgan Sierra is an ex-Israeli psychologist, and she joins Arcane and joins up with Jake Timber, who is a bit of a love interest. And they basically have to solve these supernatural mysteries. And in like in Prophecy, the pale horse of the apocalypse is coming, and you know, a quarter of the earth will be destroyed. And so I, you know, these sort of big themes come out. But I did create Arcane as itself, as a sort of, I'll never run out of plot ideas for spiritual mysteries, supernatural mysteries. So that was always a plan. But the next book, Desecration, isn't actually related. It's a completely separate crime series. And I've got another couple of things that I'm writing. So I'm definitely not a one series girl. The Arcane series is quite popular.
And Arcane is just the most amazing acronym, isn't it? What does it stand for?
Oh, don't do that to me. It's the first word is arcane, the Arcane Religious Knowledge and Numinous Experience Institute. And those who might not know the word numinous, it basically means kind of spiritual experience. So I don't know how I came up with it, but, you know, it is quite a good one. So it's Arcane spelt with a K.
Yes. Well, I'll tell you what, when you read the books, and I've read all of them, and I'm absorbed into the Morgan Sierra world. I'm surprised she doesn't seem to sleep or eat or anything.
No,
like
she
that.
Doesn't, or rest, no.
She doesn't have time for any of that kind of stuff, but they're very enjoyable, and they're really good holiday reads, and you can read them on a plane, you can read them on a beach and this sort of stuff, and they're all available in print and on Kindle. I love that about you.
And audio as well now.
Yeah, which is just great. But when I read them, instantly when you read one, you think of Dan Brown. But I've got to say, Dan Brown with a bit more intelligence and everything else, because it's not quite as... This could be possible just about within the bounds of everything.
Yeah, and I mean, that's kind of my aim. I base my work on a lot of research. Research, I love research.
Well, you travel everywhere, don't you? You go to the places, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I've spent a lot of time in Jerusalem and Spain and, you know, all the places that, well, probably 90% of the places in the books are places I've been myself. Or the latest one Day in Budapest, I wrote after a long weekend in Budapest last year. And I have, the sense of place is very important to me. So I put a lot of detail in about the actual setting, where the characters are, you know, actually spins a lot of the plot for me. And I'm a very kind of visual writer, so I always want you to be able to see where you are in the world when you're with the characters kind of doing that. But part of my reason for designing this life as well, when I wrote down what do I want out of my life, one of the most important things for me was travel. And with doing this as a job now, as a professional speaker and as an author who writes books that are set in all these places, I actually get to travel as part of my work. And I love that. So Yeah, I think the idea that you should be able to think this could actually happen is very important. And I received an email from a reader of mine who said, he goes and checks all my facts after he reads the book. And at the back of every book is like an author's note, and I explain some of the stuff. But he actually goes and checks everything to work out what's real and what I've made up, which I thought was actually the ultimate compliment.
He's a nice kind of stalker. That sounds lovely.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you created this. I think I heard the word authorpreneur the first from you, actually. And this person that's an entrepreneur, you've got to be a business person. You've got to be creative. You've got to know, the ins and outs of the publishing industry. And obviously, as a result of doing it, I mean, I look up to you as somebody that I consider a real success. You pulled yourself up from the bootstraps. You didn't give up your day job until you could do. And how many books have you sold now? It's
75,000. Yeah,
that is incredible. I mean, that's a huge amount of books. That's 75,000 people on the planet have had some sort of reaction.
Well, some of them have read multiple books, like yourself.
Of course, yeah, yes, indeed, yes. But if you're starting from scratch, so let's say somebody's watching this or listening to this and they're starting from scratch. What would your advice to them be? How would they? What's the process they should go through to create this sort of lifestyle, which is, in many people's eyes is idyllic. Obviously, still a lot of hard work. But how do you start?
Well, I can only say how I started and what I did, which was, one, write the books. If you want to be an author, you do have to write. And I spend mm-hmm. a lot of time learning how to write, and I continue to learn how to write. I think it's quite obvious that I would be a better writer after, on the sixth novel than I would have been on the first one. And I have actually, republished Pentecost last year based on, sort of re-editing it again. And yeah, okay. Sort of just a light edit because my writing's got more mature. And so I guess the first thing is to write and to invest in your craft and learn about this stuff. And I have been on courses. I read a lot of books. I study the genre that I write in. So the Arcane books are action adventure thrillers. Desecration is more of a crime mystery novel. So they have slightly different expectations. So you have to invest in that primarily. And then secondarily, what happened to me with my first book was I wrote it, I invested in my writing, I published it, I self-published, and then nobody bought it. And the reason nobody bought it is because nobody knew who I was back in 2007. I didn't have anything on the internet. I didn't have a website. I didn't. Twitter had just started. There was no Kindle. I blogging was happening, but wasn't that big. All I knew about marketing was that you need to have a press release and you need to get in the paper and on TV and stuff. And even though I did that, I did do press releases, I did make it onto national TV, national radio, I still didn't sell any books. That's because online marketing works so much better. So the other thing I think people need to do is actually invest in their marketing knowledge. And I know people look at my website now at The Creative Pen and think I know a lot about marketing, and I kind of do. And I have actually written a book, How to Market a Book, based on learning this stuff. But I basically spent 5-6 years learning how to do marketing because I was so upset when none of my books sold anything, 5 years ago, that I wanted to make sure that didn't happen. So I think at the same time as investing in your writing craft, you also have to invest in starting to attract an audience and build an audience around, or at least join communities, whether it's Goodreads, if you're into, reading a lot, or Twitter, or a network of people who love what you love. If you read romance, join, start following romance blogs, get to know the bloggers, that type of thing. And don't be obvious about, that you're a writer and everything, but just actually be authentic and be in communities that you're interested in. And then when you actually have a book ready, it might take a year or 2 years or whatever, then you'll actually have some people who might be interested in having a look at your book.
So I guess, Joe, we started on our publishing journeys around the same time, kind of 2006, 2007, when self-publishing was just getting a foothold. But nowadays you've got so much choice. You can self-publish or indie publish, as it's called nowadays, or traditionally publish, go with a publishing house, Or there's also Halfway House Solutions, where you do assisted publishing or collaborative publishing, or even crowdfunded publishing. Do you have a choice or a preference for which way you go?
Well, I'm an entrepreneur, like you say, and to me, all an entrepreneur, if people think that they're not one, all an entrepreneur does is create value out of nothing or out of their heads. That I think that's basically what an entrepreneur does. It must create value in the world, and it's out of your head or nothing. And authors are that by definition, I think. So when I guess... The whole self-publishing thing, when I finished my first book way years ago, I didn't like the negative energy or the power differential between authors and agents and publishers at that point, where basically you had to go begging. And some people still do go begging, you know, pick me. I didn't really like that negative energy after the positive energy of creating something new in the world. So I decided to self-publish at that point because I wanted to sort of empower myself as an entrepreneur. Now, the fact that that book sold no copies is a testament to the fact that just self-publishing doesn't necessarily mean you're going to sell any books. But now what's happened, of course, in the last 5 years is the Amazon Kindle has gone mainstream. And what that means is that readers can get books all over the world. And this is now, you know, now there's Kobo, there's, the iBookstore, there's Smashwords, there's all of these different places where readers can get books. Plus, we can a lot of people actually buy print books through Amazon and through these online stores. And what we can do now as authors is actually directly publish on these huge bookstores. So I directly publish to Amazon KDP for the Kindle and to Amazon CreateSpace for the print books. And essentially that means that I get paid by Amazon. So most of my income right now is from Amazon, Kobo, CreateSpace, you know, these companies that sell books. So my income comes directly from selling stuff. And I just paraphrase it as, you know, make stuff, sell stuff. That's what it's about. That's the creative entrepreneurship model. You make it and you sell it. You don't spend this whole gap in the middle of like pitching people and waiting years and years and years for someone else to pick you. And also what's happened in the market right now is successful indie authors are getting picked up by traditional publishers. So Hugh Howey is the kind of big name right now. He self-published a series of novellas called Wool, and they got picked up by Ridley Scott for a film option, and then he got a print-only deal with a big publisher, and his books are all over the place now. Here in London, you see them on the underground and in bookstores, and yet he still owns the ebook rights. He still makes his own money from ebooks, and he sold the print rights. So what's happening is we're in this stage right now where authors are very empowered to make decisions about their own work. I have a New York agent. I have, you know, my books are being offered to publishers. So I think you can do both. And this new model is called the hybrid model, where you try and get the best of both worlds. But essentially what it comes down to is I want to be in creative control of my own writing career. I want to be able to write what I want, publish what I want, you know, and reach the audience, I guess, that I want to reach.
Indeed, and I just love the way that you do the Kindle, the audio and the print version, but also all your books, in my view, have got film written all over them.
Oh, yeah. Well, that is one thing that is hard as an indie right now. But the thing is, most film agents are separate from literary agents anyway. Okay. So film rights are actually one of those difficult things. What's probably more accessible is the foreign rights at the moment. Through the Alliance of Independent Authors, we've got PubMatch, which is a website you can sell your subsidiary rights, you know, like your German rights or whatever. And also I'm now working doing joint ventures with translators around various languages. So I've got German and Spanish coming out next year. But again, I will be selling direct in the market. And if people don't know, if any of your listeners don't know, the royalty share from Amazon, Kobo and these other sites is around 70%, so 70%. And if you sign with a traditional publisher, you're more likely to get between 7% and 15%. You know, so you can even be in single digit royalties. And so if you think about that and the way the world's going now, and my books are now selling in 22 countries. I even sold a book in Burkina Faso the other day in Africa, which I was thrilled about. And I mean, that's not obviously a lot of books, but I sell a lot more in Germany, New Zealand, Australia, Brazil. These are markets that are only going to grow in the next, you know, in the next 5 years. I see that the income from all of those other countries is going to be massive and will hopefully match the US and the UK sales, which are already quite mature markets.
Gotcha. Now, you mentioned the Alliance of Independent Authors, and I'm a member of that alliance too. And it's just any question you've got at all, you just post it in the forum, and within minutes you get fantastic answers back that shortcut so much time. But for somebody that hasn't written and published their books, obviously, if you do get a deal with a publisher, if you're very lucky, you might get an advance on royalties, although they're very thin on the ground, certainly for first-time authors. But certainly, they will take a lot. They will bear a lot of the costs. And the processes of taking your draft from this sort of rough draft into hopefully a highly polished work of art. But if you're an independent or self-published author, what are the steps that you've got to go through, and what are the likely costs that you might have to pay for?
Well, first up, we should say that most publishers and agents right now are not going to accept a rough manuscript.
Yes, that's true. Yeah.
If you're going to pitch, you actually have to pitch pretty much a polished version anyway.
Yes.
You may well get another edit, but there is very little, you know, taking of a rough diamond and turning it into something amazing, because it's just so expensive for publishers. So
sure.
Actually, most authors are going to have to get a freelance editor anyway. What happened a few years ago is there was a massive upheaval in publishing. There still is all the time, but a whole load of professional editors, cover designers, etc., got laid off. So what there is right now in the freelance market is a whole load of professional editors, you know, formatters, cover designers, you know, proofreaders, translators. All of these people are available for hire. So whereas with traditional publishing, the publisher takes the cost, but they also take the large percentage of the royalty. With self-publishing, the author pays the cost, but then receives the large percentage of the royalty. So it's a case of who pays the money up front. So essentially, I found that my first book was the most expensive, because I did use a structural editor, which is someone who helped me understand the whole structure of a novel, which actually is quite hard when you're writing fiction to grasp scenes and point of view and dialogue. And there are just lots of things that you need to know. And I thought paying an editor was the best way to learn that, was to write a book and then pay someone to help me with it. And then, of course, you've got the line edit, or the copy edit, which is actually the individual, the classic red line through the manuscript type of thing, and that's generally the most expensive edit. And then I go through proofreads. I use beta readers, who are people who get to read the manuscript at an earlier stage and make comments that I then use as feedback. And I also use experts. So with my crime novel, I had a police sergeant read it. I had a coroner. You know, those types of, and a medical doctor to pick up the medical issues, that type of thing. And then I do all the rewrites. And then just before I publish, I have a proofreader who's the person who finally picks up, you know, those last typos and I'm terrible with commas. So she does all of that, but she doesn't comment on the content. So essentially, I'm basically emulating the traditional publishing process, because I want to produce a very quality product. And my opinion about indie books is, the buyer on Amazon should not be able to tell that my book is self-published. It's actually professionally published, in that I've used just as many professionals as a traditional publisher has. I also have a professional cover designer. So in terms of cost, yes, this does cost some money. And you have to really look at this from a business perspective. When you start your own business, you have to invest some money in order to get back some money. And this is another reason, I think, for writing a series with the first books, is because the second novel, I had the characters established and I knew the framework and I could practice writing a novel without having to reinvent everything. Whereas this new series, starting with Desecration, I've actually had to reinvent everything, the whole world, the characters, you know, everything is kind of brand new. So I don't really want to give exact costs because it will depend. For example, I had a client who came to me and said, my novel is 400,000 words. And I said, okay, that's more like a trilogy. And if people don't know, a standard novel is max 100,000 at the moment, unless it's a fantasy novel when it's about maybe 120. And my books are around 80,000. They're very fast paced. Thrillers are usually shorter. Romance is 50,000. So this guy had 400,000 words. If you want to pay an editor to edit 400,000 words, it's going to cost you about 10 grand. Because it's way too big. But of course, if he actually self-edited that work first, which is what I suggested he did, down to a manageable 100,000 words, or split it into a trilogy, then you're looking more at around $1,000 for an edit. But essentially, I would just don't use that figure I just said as the benchmark. I've got a whole list at thecreativepen.com/editors. And there's a whole list there of editors and various, all different pricing, that type of thing. So you can actually have a look. And good editors will actually tell you, look, I'm sorry, I can't work with this, or this is not my type of thing, or you need this type of edit. So you can interview people, that type of thing. But it's definitely worth investing in professionals to make your book as good as it can be.
So I noticed that you synthesize this great lifestyle, and there must be an opportunity nowadays for people to fund their writing by offering a service to other writers. So, for example, you know, I help other people get rid of writer's block, and that will keep me in the publishing industry, in that kind of work. So I don't have to go and do a day job somewhere else and then write at night or in the morning. I could kind of, you know, consolidate both activities into one thing. So there's an opportunity, isn't there, for people that want to write a book to get involved in some aspect of the production process. You know, that could be cover design or editing, or I think even Thomas Hardy was a copywriter at one point.
Oh, I didn't know that. But
Yeah, so
it's interesting you mentioned Thomas Hardy, because he's one of the examples I use. In the British Library, there's a copy of Tess of the D'Urbervilles, the first page of Tess of the D'Urbervilles. It wasn't called Tess. She wasn't even called Tess. And the title wasn't Tess. And the first page is just full of crossing out and marks and things. And what that shows you, that even the most brilliant books in the English language that we consider to be the pinnacle of literature were heavily edited. And because I think people often get this feeling that, oh, you know, an author just sits down and creates magical words in one go, just like every sentence is perfect. That's not actually true. That the biggest piece of work that I think we do is the editing process. So when you write a first draft, it's a first draft. You know, some people, there are examples of very famous writers writing sort of 9 drafts, you know, from scratch. And, you know, doing all of that editing process is so important for actually getting your book into shape. And when you read, when you read somebody's writing, understand that it will have gone through a lot of edits. But of course, self-editing first is very important before you pay a professional.
Yeah, but I found actually just reading your own book out is actually brilliant, because if you can't you can't say it out loud, then the chance of a reader being able to read it in loud is pretty slim, I would reckon. Mm. So, but nowadays, the writing and publishing the book is one thing, and it's great that we can now do this, pretty much under our own steam with help of other professionals, because obviously you can't mark your own homework, and you sometimes can't see your errors and stuff. But there's another aspect to it now, which I think that the Creative Pen you mentioned, your website, is a great example of. You've built the most amazing author platform, whether you are an independent author or traditionally published, traditional publishers now, as part of your pitch, will say, where's your platform? You know, have you got access to your market? What is an author platform? Is not something you stand on, is it? It's something built on online.
Yeah, I guess it's something you stand on online. But but really, a platform is just how many people can you reach and how do you reach them. And for me, the ultimate thing an author needs is an email list. Mm-hmm. So I actually have 2 brands. I write fiction under JF Pen, F for Francis, my middle name. Mm-hmm. And I have the Creative Pen. So when I started the Creative Pen, it wasn't with the intention of becoming an author speaker at all. It was that I had been ripped off and I was disappointed and I was unhappy with self-publishing at that point and what I'd learned through marketing. And so I wanted to share all my lessons learned so that other people wouldn't, suffer in the same way. So essentially I started the Creative Pen as just a blog of like, here are my lessons learned. And over the years, you know, then I started a podcast and a YouTube channel and Twitter and all of that. And it attracted other authors. But for my fiction, I started another website, and it was quite, it's been quite interesting because I've almost had to start again because the Creative Pen attracts, you know, writers. I need to attract readers of my type of thriller. So JF Pen, I've started kind of building there. But I think the main thing people need to start with at least is a static site, which I suggest you use WordPress. I mean, you don't need to blog. It's not necessary. You at least need a static website with an email sign up list on. And then at the back of your books, you can say, if you enjoyed this book, please come and sign up for my list here. That will at least stop the ball rolling very slowly. And then everything else on top of that is jam. So for me, I do blog at the Creative Pen. I do occasionally blog on JF Pen. I do research videos, which I put on YouTube. I do author interviews like, you know, like you're doing. I do all kinds of, you know, I do Twitter. I do all kinds of things to bring people back to that hub on the internet. And then my list is my main way of reaching people. So how to market a book, which was quite a risk really as a title, because I realized when I published, self-published that book, it was very important for it to become a bestseller.
Absolutely.
Because with a title like that, it's kind of important. But what actually happened was I sent an email. All I did was publish it. It was up there. I sent an email to my list on that day that it came out and said, the book is on sale today and then I'm putting the price up in a couple of days' time. Here's the link to buy, go buy it now. And the book became a number one bestseller in entrepreneurship and writing skills within, you know, about 4 hours. So that email list was the thing that created a best-selling book. And so I think that the most important thing for authors is to build that email list over time. And in fact, not just for authors, for anyone, like for you with your speaking and for me with my speaking and for people with a small business, anything. If you're selling anything or you're trying to reach an audience, you do have to build up an email list of people who are interested in your work.
That's fantastic advice. Thank you for that. But if someone looks at your website, it looks massive. And if they thought, I've got to write a book and build something like that, that might really put them off. But I noticed that you have the Author 2.0 Blueprint, which is actually a really good guide for people that want to set out on this path.
Yes, well, I started doing courses for people because this world changes very fast. And I think possibly because I was an IT consultant, I'm quite happy on computers, although I never did programming or marketing or anything. So all of the stuff I've learned is new. But I started doing courses to teach people about this stuff because I can't do it all in person. You know, I do a lot of speaking, but essentially in order to help people all over the world, you need to have courses and things. So so there's the free Author 2.0 Blueprint, which is at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. And then that has links to all kinds of other stuff and products that are available. And I've got a whole load of courses on the website as well. But most of the information is free. So, you know, sort of 99% of my information on the Creative Pen is free. And then I have some products as well. But one of my goals back in 4 years ago, I guess, again, when I started the blog, or coming up to 5 years, actually, was to help, to help a million books come into the world. So as in, you know, help inspire and help people publish a million books. And I get so enthusiastic when I get emails saying, oh, you helped me publish this and that and the other. And so that kind of is what drives me to help people, because there's a lot of people want to do this. They want to create work and, you know, get their book out there, but it's just knowing how to do it. And mentioning the Alliance of Independent Authors again, I think it's very important if people want to be an author to listen to other authors. Don't listen to people who want you to pay them to publish or pay them to do your marketing or whatever, listen to other authors who've done this before, of which I am one and you are one, and the Alliance of Independent Authors has a lot of us. And I don't publish anyone and I don't do marketing for anyone. All I do is tell people how to do it themselves. So I think listening to and reading blogs and learning from other authors is the very best way to navigate this new world.
But apart from the fantastic resource that you've created in the Creative Pen, I noticed in your latest book, which I've just finished, One Day in Budapest, there's also a different aspect of Joanna, and that's that you've got a pretty hard-hitting message to take to humanity about some of the things that are going on in the world at the moment.
Yeah, so One Day in Budapest is really about the rise of right-wing nationalism in Eastern Europe. And it's the most political thing I've written, really, mainly because my husband is Hungarian background, and his grandparents, he's Jewish, and his grandparents' family, some of them are in the mass grave in the Budapest synagogue. So we visited the synagogue, and when we went to Budapest, we also visited the House of Terror, which was the communist, you know, the place where the communists took people and they disappeared. And there's this massively dark history in Budapest. And also a sense of survival, and you know, the Jews who are still there, you know, but totally decimated by the Second World War. And so when we were there, what was so weird was at the same time we were there looking at the history of Hungary and Budapest back in the 30s and 40s, there was also at the same time in the parliament there's a party who are calling for a national register of Jews. And this was 2012. This is actually happening. Yeah, and there are marches of black shirts around villages, Roma people being targeted. And we were just there going, this is crazy. This is actually happening again. I'm not a political person. I don't march politically, and I try not to get into political arguments, but when I was doing, the thing I can do is tell a story. So I wrote One Day in Budapest as a fictional account of what would happen if this sort of right-wing party start to take over the city, and it's sort of one day to try and stop them. It's a very fast-paced book, but as you say, it's got this underlying message. And Most of the Arcane books and most of my books in general, I do try and tackle big themes. So all of the Arcane series is about what is faith, what is real, what is religious belief. You know, it kind of, is there a God? But, you know, I don't come up with an answer. So they're not Christian books, as in they're not for hardcore Christians, but they bring up ideas that are in theology. And then Desecration, which is coming, is the dualism of physical body versus spiritual body, and what goes on after we die, and why do we care so much about the body, and you know, what people do with their bodies, and body modification and corpse art and things like this. It's quite so against all that, you know, you've read the books, they're very fast-paced, kick-ass action adventure type of thing. So I guess I like to disguise my deep and meaningful thoughts underneath a story and characters, and I think that's always going to happen, because part of my fascination with being a writer is that I spend my life investigating these things. And I've just started writing Delirium, which is about the history of psychiatry and madness, and what is madness, and are we all mad? Are we all on the spectrum of madness? So it's more about mental health. So I'm so fascinated by so many things that writing a book about them is the way I learn, I guess.
Well, Jo, thanks for coming on The Zone Show and for sharing your wisdom and experience, which I know is going to be useful to not only new writers, but experienced writers, and indeed myself. So I wish you every success with both Desecration and Delirium, and let's have you back on the show soon to talk about them. And the best place for people to find you online is at thecreativepen.com.
Yes, so thecreativepen.com, pen with a double N, or at thecreativepen on Twitter, or all my books are at, under jfpen.com.
And if anyone is on Twitter and wants to know what's happening inside the publishing industry and get the pulse of the publishing industry, just follow Jo's tweets. They tell you absolutely everything. That's where I learn all my new things. So great pleasure to chat to you today, Jo, and I wish you every success.
Thanks so much for having me, Tom.
Great pleasure.